Okay, good morning. The weekly shiur from Masechta Sotah is sponsored by David and Paul Baumzer, OMO Construction, Building Futures. Breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch. We are Nishmas Shimon ben Zev and Fega Bas Chaim and Zev ben David and Sarah Bas Shalom, Chaim ben Yoshua and Edel Bas Moshe Yosef. We are on Daf Lamed Aleph in Sotah. We're going to finish up the parak and then we're going to start and hopefully finish the next parak. It's a short parak. We are at the two dots on the top of Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, which quotes directly from the Mishnah. The Mishnah was on Chaf Zayin Amud Beis. And it might be worth it to just flip back to the Mishnah first, because we'll just do a few lines in the Mishnah there so we get the context of what we're talking about. So if you flip back to Chaf Zayin Amud Beis, towards the bottom, the two dots that are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines from the last narrow line, it says, Bo Bayom Darash Rabbi Yoshua ben Hyrcanus. So as we've said before in this Mishnah, whenever it says Bo Bayom generally throughout Shas, Rashi points out here that Bo Bayom is referring to that day when they reopened the Beis Medrash and more people were let in after Rabban Gamliel had been deposed and there was a new Nasi. And they, Rav Elazar ben Azariah was now the Nasi, and they reopened the Beis Medrash, and they figured out lots of problems that day that they hadn't previously figured out. So Bo Bayom, on that day, they also said the following, specifically Rabbi Yoshua ben Hyrcanus. Bo Bayom darsh Rabbi Yoshua ben Hyrcanus, he darshened, lo avad Iov es HaKadosh Baruch Hu elam Avai. So he made a statement, and he said, Iov, who we know the whole story of Iov was that he was a person who stuck with Hashem, he stuck with his faith, even though all sorts of terrible calamities happened to him. So Rabbi Shimon Harkana says that Iov served Hashem me'ava, from love. He wasn't that he was afraid of death, of bad things happening to him, and that's why he served Hashem. Rather, he had a genuine closeness to Hashem. It was me'ava. And how do I know that, says Rabbi Shimon Harkana? Shenemar, and he quotes a pasuk from Iov, where the pasuk says, Iov is talking, Hein yiktileni lo ayachel, that if they kill me, or even if I'm killed, meaning if I'm so far as being killed, lo ayachel, I will still trust in him. Adayan, lo ayachel, I will still trust in him. That was his proof from the pasuk. So it shows that that Iov had a kind of a connection to Hashem, even if I'm going to be killed, as if to say, even if the worst things should happen to me, even if the things that might have incentivized me to serve Hashem a yira, even if kind of those things are already befall me, I'll still stick with him. I'll still trust in Hashem. That proves that he was serving Hashem me'ava. And then the Mishnah says, Vadayin hadavar shakul lo. And it wasn't clear still to Rabbi Yoshua ben Hyrcanus, just based on that pasuk alone, because ani mitzape o ani mitzape, because it's not clear from that pasuk if whether he's saying lo ayachel, I will trust him, or I will not trust him. Meaning, as Rashi points out here, the lo, what is that?
Whether it's an aleph
or a vav. Whether it's an aleph or a vav. So Talmud lomar adeg vav lo asir tamusi menu. And then he found another pasuk that clarified it, that until I die, I will still put my trust in the integrity of Hashem. There, you can't read the lo with a vav. It just doesn't make sense because it's not possessive. Lo asir tumasi meni. So lo there must mean with the aleph, and then you can understand what's going on. Melamed shemei ava asa. So he concluded from that, based on that, that Iov served Hashem from love. So the Gemara on Daf Lamed Aleph, which is going to pick up where we just read, asks the obvious question. You're not clear, you sure still weren't clear about which way it went after you read that pasuk? You weren't sure whether it was an aleph or a vav? Why don't you just read the pasuk and see whether our tradition has it as an aleph or a vav? So the Gemara says, V'lech say hi lo, ibalamid aleph, ksiv, lo, hu, ibalamid vav, ksiv, lohu, right? If it's written with an aleph, then it means no. And if it's written with a vav, it means his. And then you would understand which way it goes. And you could see clearly it says, lo his, that I will still trust in him, not that I won't trust. And so that shows that it's me'ava, and that's clear. So why don't you just follow the spelling of the word? So the Gemara answers by saying, rhetorically, V'cholhecha d'chsiv b'lamet aleph lohu. Is it true that whenever you see the word lo spelled in Tanakh with an aleph, it necessarily means no or not? El me'ata, but we're going to quote you another pasuk, a pasuk in Yeshaya, b'chol tzar asam lo tzar. That in all of the troubles of Klal Yisrael, this is the Navi Yeshaya speaking about Hashem's attitude towards Klal Yisrael, that in all the troubles of that Klal Yisrael went through, Hashem was troubled with them. B'chol tzar asam lo tzar. That makes it sound like d'chsiv b'lamid aleph, it's written with a lo, as if not. Hachanami d'lohu. Can you say that it means that he wasn't troubled? Meaning, if you read that as low as not troubled, it means that in all of the troubles that befell Klal Yisrael, Hashem was not troubled. Are you going to tell me that that really is true, that the low is read literally there to mean that Hashem wasn't troubled? That doesn't fit the context. V'chitem ha'chinami, you want to say that Hashem wasn't troubled with the tzaros that Hashem, that befell Klal Yisrael, ha'chinami, devaksiv u'malach panav hoshiyem. It says that Hashem was kind of on the side of Klal Yisrael. That's the context. And so it's clear that Hashem was troubled by the tzaros that befell. And so therefore it's clear, el olav mashmahachi umashmahachi. It's got to be that whenever the word lo appears, sometimes it means lo possessive, sometimes it means not. And you can't necessarily derive from the way it's spelled which way it goes, because this pasuk in Yeshaya clearly is spelled not. And yet its clear intent and clear meaning is possessive lo. And therefore, you can't derive from the way it's written. And that's why, Rav Yehoshua ben Hyrcanus was still unsure when he read that pasuk which way it went, whether Eov was serving Hashem me'ava u'me'ira. That's why it was still an open question. Good. Tanya, we have a braisa that says, Re'mer omer ne'mar yirei elokim be'Eov. Eov was called a yirei elokim in the pasuk there. V'ne'mar yirei elokim be'Avram. And Avram was also called a Yirei Elokim. This is an alternative way of deriving whether Eov served Hashem me'ava u'me'ira. Ma Yirei Elokim ha'omer ba'Avraham me'ava. Just like we know, Avram served Hashem me'ava. Af Yirei Elokim ha'omer b'Eov me'ava. The same terminology is used, the same phraseology is used. And so since we know that Avram served Hashem me'ava, so we can conclude for sure that Eov served Hashem me'avra. Me'ava, from love. The Gemara challenges that and says, V'Avram gufe minolan. How do you know that Avram serves Hashem me'ava? And the answer is, D'chsiv zera Avram ohavai. Hashem refers to Avram as the one who loved me, meaning that he served him me'ava. Good. So we have two alternative ways of determining that Eov served Hashem me'ava, either from that pasuk, those are the pair of psukim that the Mishnah brought, or from Reimer's tradition that it is serving of Hashem of Avraham, and just like Avraham served Hashem Me'ava, so too Eov served Hashem Me'ava. And now the Gemara says, well, what does this all matter? What's the difference between serving Hashem Me'ava or Me'ira? Ma'ika bein osa Me'ava or osa Me'ira. What's the difference? Ika had the tanya Rabbi Shimon Alaz, had the tanya. The difference is found in the following braisa where we quote Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Omer, he says, Gadol ha'osa me'ava yoser min ha'osa me'ira. It's better to serve Hashem me'ava than to serve him me'ira. Shezet toli le'elef dor, because one holds you over for 1,000 generations. Meaning, if you serve me'ava, so then Hashem is going to kind of use your zechuyos to forgive many, many generations after you, even if they stray from the path a little bit. So if you do it Meira, you're only helping or ensuring the next 1,000 generations. But if you serve Hashem Me'ava, then you help ensure the next 2,000 generations. How do we know that? Hacha k'siv, right? V'osa chesed la'alafim, lo'avai, l'shomrei mitzvasai. La'alafim sounds like plural, right? Lalafim, at least 2,000. Leohavai, Leshomrei mitzvosai, for the people who love me. So that demonstrates that someone who serves Hashem Me'ava is going to preserve his zechuyos for 2,000 generations. V'hasam, in a different pasuk, it says, Uksiv, u'lishomrei mitzvosai li'elef dor, and to my people who not necessarily are motivated by Ava, but they simply adhere to the mitzvos. So the people who simply adhere to the mitzvos, presumably because they're serving Hashem Meira, that only holds them over Elef Dor for 1,000 generations. So the Gemara says, whoa, slow down, hold on 1 second. You cheated. That pasuk also says, Le'olavai, Hasam Nami Kziv Le'olavav U'shomrei Mitzvosav Le'elef Dor. Both of those psukim invoke not only people who are serving the Yira, but also people serving Ava. So one pasuk says that people may serve may Ava get preserved or get held over for 2,000 generations. Another pasuk says Ava and Yira for 1,000 generations. So it doesn't prove you one way or another. So the Gemara answer is Haigud the Samich Lei, Vaigud the Samich Lei. We'll focus on the smichos of the words, meaning the word la'alafim, in the first pasuk, the word la'alafim, 2,000 generations, is next to le'olavai. That's the proximity, right? And then it says le'olashomrei mitzvosai. In the other pasuk, it's le'olavai u'lishomrei mitzvosav le'elef dor. There, the proximity of 1,000 generations is next to the shomrei mitzvosav, which is connotes the people who are serving Hashem Meira. So look at where the placement of the word elef, of the phrase elef dor or alpayim dor is in the pasuk. If it's next to the oavai, then it's referring to that. If it's next to the shomrei mitzvosai, it's referring to that. And that's how we derive that people who serve me'ava get preserved for 2,000 generations. People who serve me'ira get preserved for 1,000 generations. And then the Gemara is going to just conclude the perek with a story that is that follows the same idea. Hano trei talmidei. There were two talmidim. Davu yasvi kamei de Rava. They were sitting next to Rava, or in front of Rava. Chad amar lei. So one said to him, Akarium b'chalamai. I had a dream, and in that dream they were reading to me a pasuk, the pasuk of Marav tuvcha asher tzafantu lireyecha, that how great is your goodness that was preserved for your people who fear you. The Chadamar, and the other Talmud says, Chadamar lei, Akaryum b'chalamai, I had a dream where they were reading to me a different pasuk. V'yismichu kolchosi b'ch, v'yolam yiranenu v'yaltzu b'cha o'avei shemecha. That all the people who kind of look to you will rejoice and will forever be rejoiceful. They'll get strength from the specifically O'avei Shemecha, the people who love your name. So one of those psukim is talking about good things that will happen to people who are Yirei Shemayim, people who serve Hashem from Yira, from fear. And the other pasuk is referring to people who serve Hashem Me'ava. And so Rava, who heard these two dreams, Amar Luhu, Tarvaichu Rabbanan Sadiki Gemurin, you're both great Rabbanan, you're both Sadikim, Atun Mar Me, Atun, I'm sorry, Tarvaichi Rabbanan Sadiki Gemuri Atun, both of you are big rabbis at Sadikim, Mar Me Ava, Umar Me Yira. And one of you serves from Ava, meaning the one of you who had that dream serves Me Ava, the one who had the other dream serves Me Yira. So we see that both of them are legitimate ways of serving Hashem, right? Even the one who serves Hashem Meira gets preserved for 1,000 generations. That's a pretty good deal. It's just that serving Hashem Me'ava is even better, and you get preserved for 2,000 generations. Okay, that's the end of the fifth parak of Sota, and now we're going to start the sixth parak of Sota, and hopefully, with Hashem's help, we'll finish the sixth parak of Sota because it's very, very short. I googled last night what is the shortest parak in the Talmud, the shortest chapter in the Talmud, and Google didn't give me any good answer. So then I went to ChatGPT and I said, I figured ChatGPT should be able to figure it out. They have the Talmud in front of them, right? So, but they said there are many different editions of the Talmud, so it's hard to say. So I said, okay, what's the shortest chapter in the Vilna edition of the Talmud? And it still said there are many different editions of the Vilna edition. I'm kind of all confused. So. Right, that's what it is. So I don't know. I can't tell you if this is the shortest parak in Shas. Maybe it is. I don't know, but it's pretty short. It's so short that hopefully we'll finish it now. Okay, so just to review, the very first Mishnah of Maseches Sota had a machlokes between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer as to how many witnesses you need for stira. So just to review this whole thing, right? If a husband suspects his wife of adultery, he does kinoi. He warns her not to be secluded with this man. If she then becomes secluded with him, so we're not sure whether they actually sinned together, and that's when we administer the mesota to try to figure it out, to get her to admit, or to figure out whether she actually sinned. Now, if there's a witness that saw them actually sin together, we're going to see in our Mishnah again, then there's no mesota, because we know what happened. The mesota is only operative when we're not sure what happened, when we need to be figure out what happened behind closed doors. So if there was a witness that saw them actually sin together, then game over, and you follow the normal rules of what happens to a woman who was unfaithful. They have to get divorced, and she might get punished if there were two witnesses, if there was hasra, if there was warning, etc. But be it as it may, there's no mesota if there's a witness that they sinned. There's only mesota if there's a witness or two that they were together. Now, how many witnesses do you need for them to have been together? How many witnesses need to have witnessed them in behind closed doors? How many witnesses do you need for stira in order to administer the mesota? That itself is a machlokas in the very, very first Mishnah between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua says you need two witnesses that they had stira. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, even only one witness is enough. Not only that, I think he even says, even if you don't have any witnesses, it's just you kind of have circumstantial evidence that they were together, that's going to be enough to feed her the mesota and to do the whole ritual. So the first four lines of the Mishnah here refer to Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer in something like that machlokas, but it doesn't track exactly that machlokas, and Rashi has to do a lot of work here to kind of explain what each of them are saying. And basically, where Rashi ends up is by saying that the machlokas we just said, which is the hard facts of when you become a sota, that's the first Mishnah in the Masechta. This Mishnah is talking about something a little different, which is the idea that even if you don't feed the mesota, he could decide to divorce her because he doesn't like what's going on. She might lose the ksuba, she might not lose the ksuba, and that's what this Mishnah is kind of focused on. So the Mishnah says, Mishakine l'ishto, someone who warned his wife not to be secluded, vinistera, and then she became secluded. Afilu shama me'of ha-poreach, even if you didn't have witnesses that she was secluded, but you just heard a little birdie who told you that they were secluded, meaning you heard a rumor that they were secluded, your parrot told you that he saw them secluded, that's actually something we shouldn't talk about that. You have some kind of very, very flimsy basis for knowing that they're secluded, but yet you have reason, some reason to believe they're secluded. So then Yotzi v'yitein ksuba divrei Rabbi Eliezer. You may divorce her and give her the ksuba. Now, as we said, Rabbi Eliezer said that you don't actually need witnesses, and so in fact, as Rashi points out, with this level of testimony, with this very low level of testimony, even this parrot or this birdie who told you that they were secluded, Rabbi Eliezer would say that's sufficient to administer the mesota, right? So that's the Rashi says, Nesra alav, she's asura to him, vim eino rotza lashkosa, yotzi v'tein ksuba. It's always up to him. He could decide to administer the mesota to go through with this whole thing, and Rabbi Eliezer says, you're there. You could do that based on this very flimsy evidence. But it's also true that if he decides not to, he can just call it a day and say, okay, I just want to get divorced from you. I don't want to administer the mesota. That's Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, at sheyisu v'yitnu ba mozros bilavana. Rabbi Yoshua says, now again, Rabbi Yoshua said, in order to administer the mesota, you need two witnesses that they had been secluded. But Rabbi Yoshua is saying here, if all you're looking for is to just divorce her and not give her the ksuba and give the ksuba, you don't need the witnesses that you would require to administer the mesota. All you really need to do is that there are rumors circulating. At Yisuv Yitnuba, the people who are talking to her are the Mozros Bovana, the women who are doing their weaving or their knitting under the moonlight. meaning that's the way, you know, women would gather at night under the moonlight, and that's when they would gossip, and that's when they would talk about things that were going on in the world. And so Rabbi Yeshua is saying, basically, it's true, I hold, fundamentally, that you only administer the mesota if you have two witnesses that they were secluded. But if all you're looking to is just divorce her, you could divorce her and walk away from the whole picture, even on the basis of just a loose rumor that they were together. Fine, that's the first few lines of the Mishnah. Next, Amar Eid Echad, Ani Re'isia She'en Nitmei. So as we said, if you actually have a witness that says, not only did I see them secluded, but I actually saw them intimate together, so then Lo Haisa Shosa. So that's when we don't administer the Mesota, and even an Eid Echad would be sufficient for that. We're going to learn in the Gemara why that should be sufficient. Usually throughout the Torah, you need two Eidim to do anything. Here, even an Eid Echad is going to be sufficient to call off the Mesota ritual. You're not going to drink if there was an Eid Echad that actually saw them intimate together. V'lo od, not only that, not only are these rules relaxed to allow an Eid Echad, but el afilu eved, even an eved, right, a slave who sees them, who's normally not someone who's qualified to be an aid, afilu shifcha, even a woman slave, is believed here. Hare elu ne'manim, af l'poslo miksubasa, they are believed to say that they saw her intimate with the man. On that basis, there's going to be no administration of the mesota, and in fact, she's not even going to get her ksuba on that basis.
Any question about a jealous second wife or a jealous...
Well, so that's the next thing. The next thing, what about, are we going to lower the standards so much that we're going to even allow people who we generally don't believe in the context of these kinds of things? That's the next line. Chamosa, what about her mother-in-law? Ubas Chamosa, the daughter of her mother-in-law, in other words, the husband's sister. So these are all people that in the Gemara in Yevamos, it explains why each of them have reason to kind of
hate her,
right. Therefore, they're not believed. Vitzara saw her co-wife. So co-wives generally hated each other. That's why it's called a tzara, right, who caused tzar. So all these people, the Yevimta, someone who is a potential Yevama, because it's the wife of her brother. Ubas Baila, the daughter of her husband, let's say it was a second marriage for him, and he has daughters from a previous marriage. They often do not get along with the stepmother. So all these people who normally have no nemanus when it comes to edus for a woman, even they are believed. Hare elu nemanos, they are believed to again say that she shouldn't drink the mesota. If they say that they saw her intimate with the man, we call the whole thing off. V'lo apostol miksubasa, they aren't believed so much as to say that she doesn't get her ksuba, but ela shalosh dishta, for the purpose of not feeding her in the mesota, determining that actually they were together and therefore not feeding her the mesota, even these very low-level witnesses, even witnesses that would otherwise be incapable of testifying, are believed. And the Gemara says, Shahaya Bedin, he says, the Mishnah says, I might have thought otherwise, right? My starting point would have been just the opposite. And to say, Umaim edus rishona, sheino strasa isser olam, enam eskemes pachos mishnayim, when it comes to the first testimony, meaning the testimony that of stira, right? Just that they were together secluded there, at least according to Rabbi Yoshua, as we said, you need two witnesses, and that's not even a testimony with a lot of stakes at play, because all that testimony does is it puts her into the category of someone who's going to drink the mesota, right? If the witnesses say that we saw her secluded, the next step would be feed her the water. And so that's not a testimony with a lot of high stakes, because we're going to figure out soon whether she in fact is asur labayla or not, and she might very well not be permanently asur labayla. And yet that low-stakes edus is only done with two kosher witnesses. So edus achrona, so this edus, the edus that she was metame with him, that she was actually unfaithful, that actually saw her, shows thrasa usar olam, where there's a lot at stake, because if you believe this edus, we're going to skip the sota ritual and just we're going to make them get divorced. Eino din shlo tiskayim bepachos mishnayim. So certainly here, we would have thought this was going to require two witnesses. If the low stakes Eidos of Stira requires two witnesses, so then the very high stakes Eidos of Tuma should all the more so require two kosher witnesses. Why are we letting one witness, or even her mother-in-law, or even her tzara, these, or even an Eved, and even a Shifcha, why are we letting them testify to make her Tame? Talmud Lomar ve'ed ein ba, ko edus sheish ba. Because the Pasuk says, v'shachav ish osa shichva zera v'nela mine isha v'nistra v'nit ma'a ve'ed ein ba v'nilodit basa. Right? That she's Tame if there was not two edim, not full-blown edus, meaning ko edus sheish ba, even the most minimal edus attached to the situation. The Gemara is going to flesh that out a little more, but that's the idea. From this Gzeres HaKasav, we learn that for Tuma, you only need one aid, and it could be even via very deficient aid, someone who's not normally accepted. So now,
two questions. One, what we learn about aiding someone, if I remember correctly, at least in one of the Psukim, he uses aid, that when Madayak, the aid in that case means a unit.
Yeah.
So it's not just, it's not different to one, but actually two.
Yeah.
Two or more.
That's right. The Gemara is going to use that, actually. It's going to use that very concept to prove this. Yeah.
And the second one is, in the case of, like, if she's Nitma, then you have Ne'ifa. So could she be eligible for the death penalty?
Yeah, if there was warning and if there were two witnesses.
With that, right.
Right. So
in that case there, does everyone agree that that would still require two Eidim?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's just four.
Yeah, because this pasuk of Eidim Ba is just in the context of the Sota situation, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, when it comes to that, you need two witnesses. You need need them to be kosher witnesses. You can't have, Caroline and Evan and Shifcha. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so now the Gemara says, okay, once we already got that Gzeres HaKasav, and our starting point is that you only need one aid for Tuma. So then I'm actually going to flip it and use that Kal V'chomer maybe to say that we're going to lower the standard by the initial Eidos, right? Kal V'chomer Le'Eidos HaRishona. Kal V'chomer Le'Eidos HaRishona. I should add that very Kal V'chomer that we just invoked to teach us to Eidos HaRishona. V'chomer Eidos HaRishona. Me'ata Uma'im Eidos Achrona Sh'osrasa Isser Olam. Look at the Eidos Tuma, which is going to have high stakes because it's going to make her usher to him forever. That is sufficient with one aid, as we just learned from the Gzeres HaKasav. So Eidos HaRishona, so if that's the case, so then the first testimony, meaning the testimony on the Stira, which is not very high stakes, Sheinos Rasa Isser Olam, it's just going to put her in the category of drinking the Mesota. She might ultimately be vindicated. It's not necessarily going to usher her forever. So it's a lower stake Eidos. Eino din shetiskayim beit echad. So shouldn't we have a Kal V'chomer that all the more so that should be, you should be able to testify on that with one aid. One aid alone should require to bring during the Mesota. Talmud Lomar ki matza ba ervas davar. So we have a pasuk that tells us ki matza ba ervas davar. U'alanu omer, right, again, in that context it says ki matza ba ervas davar. Ulalanu Omer al Pishnaim Edim Yakum Davar, by the classical pasuk that talks about Eidos in the whole Torah, it says al Pishnaim Edim Yakum Davar. Both of those psukim use the word Davar. Malalan al Pishnaim, just like classical Eidos is only through two witnesses, Afkan Pishnaim. So we have the fact that it uses the word Davar in this context, the context of the Stira. Just like it uses it in the context of classical Eidos, and classical Eidos we know from the Pasuk is two witnesses, so it must be that Stira is done only through two witnesses. In other words, Gzeres HaKasav. It's true, your Kal V'chomer sounds like a pretty good Kal V'chomer, but it's overridden by the Gzeres HaKasav, which tells you, no, you need two witnesses in order to conclude that there was Stira. Fine. At least, and again, this is all according to Shitas Rabbi Yoshua. Rashidus Rabbi Lazar in the first Mishnah was that you only need one aid for, he's going to have a different limit for all these. Second, but we're in Shidus Rabbi Yoshua here. Good. And then finally, the final part of the Mishnah, which the Gemara is going to pick apart at the end of the parak, says the following. Aid Omer Nitmeis. So let's say you have one aid that says she was Tamei, that says, I saw them actually intimate together, which would now mean you don't drink Mesota, and they're forbidden to each other forever. But then you have another aid that says, Ve'ed Omer Lo Nitmeis. Another aid that says they were not, an aid that says you did not see them together. Now, it's important to understand here, as Rashi points out, this second aid is not saying, I know definitively that they were not Tamei together, because if that was going on, it would be more complicated. All this aid is saying is, I know that you first aid didn't see them Tamei together. So you have an aid says they were Tamei together, I saw them intimate together, and a second and another aid comes and says, and is machish that first aid. So you have one aid against another aid. Or similarly, Isha Omeris Nitmeis, Visha Omeris Lo Nitmeis. Not even a good aid, but even someone who would otherwise be puzzle aid, just a woman. She said, one woman says, I saw them intimate together. And as we saw before, the aid doesn't need to be a kosher aid. Even a woman can be an aid for this. And then, but here you have another woman who says, no, you didn't see them intimate together. So then what do you do? Haisa Shosa. The second aid, who is Makish, the first aid, basically obliterates that first aid, and you're as if there's no aidos here. You're in your suffix situation, and you feed her the mesota. Next it says, Echad omer nitmeis, v'shnayim omer lo nitmeis, haisa shosa. If one says she was that I saw them intimate together, two say that you didn't see them intimate together, so then she does drink. This makes it sound like the two obliterate the one. We're going to see in the Gemara different ways of understanding this. Shnayim omrim nitmeis ve'echad omer lo nitmeis. Two say that they were together intimately. One said that you didn't see them. So then lo haisa shosa. So the one is not going to overcome the two in that case. We're going to see this
obviously,
is all
because we have two witnesses.
Because you have two witnesses. But okay, we're gonna flesh this all out at the end of the parak. But that's basically the point. The main point that we should keep in mind here is that if you have an aid that says that you saw them intimate together. Even if it was a woman, even if it was an Eved, even if it was a Shifcha, that's going to be enough to call off the Mesota ritual. If you have a equivalent aid that contradicts that aid and says, no, actually you didn't, so then we're going to cancel the aid them out from, the aid this is going to cancel out, and you're back in the suffix situation, and we're going to feed her the Mesota. That's where we end up in this Mishnah. Okay, the Gemara now says, Hai Talmud Lomer Kimatzo Be'ervas Davar. A few lines before we said, how do you know that you actually need, according to Rabbi Yoshua, two witnesses that they were, not that they were intimate, we're back on the case where we saw the steerer, that they were secluded together. Well, how do you know you need two witnesses, according to Rabbi Yoshua, for that? We quoted the Pasuk, Ki Matzah Ba'ervas Davar, and we had a Davar, and we said, just like Eidos generally is two witnesses, so this is Eidos generally two witnesses. Gemara says, I have a more direct way of learning it. Talmud Lomar ba v'lo b'kinoi, ba v'lo b'stira. The pasuk that taught me on Amud Aleph that one witness is sufficient to testify that they were intimate together, that was just ba. That was for that specific instance. But there's a diuk that says, only in that instance, for purposes of testifying that they were intimate together, is one witness sufficient, but not for kinoi, not for the husband warning her, but not for stira, not for the two of them being secluded together. So if that's the case, that's a sufficient limud to teach you that for stira you need two witnesses, and you shouldn't need that limud of davar from al-pishnayim edim. Right, to say it again, the pasuk that taught you that one witness is sufficient for tumah, that they were intimate together, has an implication that one witness is not sufficient for kinoi or stira, and that should be your source, Rabbi Yoshua, to learn that one witness is not sufficient for stira, that you need two witnesses. Why are you bringing a gzeres shavah from davar? So your answer is, yeah, we're throwing it all together. Hachinami kamer, talmud lomer baba v'lo b'kinoi. Right. In fact, that is true. That is where we're learning it from. We're learning it from the fact that it says ba, only for her does this special treatment apply. Only for that, only for tuma does this special treatment apply, where you only need one witness, but not kinoi, not stira. By kinoi and stira, it follows the normal rules But the thing is, we're trying to now figure out, well, okay, well, what is the normal default rule? How do you know that, generally speaking, outside of the context of Tumah, how do you know that you need two witnesses generally? The source that Tumah generally, or that Eidos generally, requires two witnesses is that Gzera Shava of Davar Davar, and that's how you learn that the default rule applies, or I should say that the default is two witnesses, and so therefore when we say that the special treatment of one witness only applies to Tumah, to seeing them intimate, but doesn't apply to Stira or Kinoi, you know that Stira or Kinoi then default to the default rule, which is two witnesses, and that you learn the default rule from Davar Davar. Fine. That's the Gemara. Okay, now we're going to focus on the last part of that Mishnah, where you had Eid Tumah. Again, we keep on saying this, that when it comes to Tumah, to actually seeing them intimate together, which is more than Stira. Stira was just that you saw them secluded. But if an Eid actually says, I saw them intimate together, so then that's going to call off the Sota ritual, because we now know with definitiveness that they were Metame together, and you don't need the Mesota to figure out what the Safek is. And as we've said many times, only one aid is needed for that, and it doesn't even need to be a good aid. It could be an Isha, it could be an Eved, it could be a Shifcha, it could be a mother-in-law, etc. So the Gemara says, and our Mishnah said, if you have one aid who says Tamei, and then an aid who says not Tamei, they cancel each other out, and then you would administer the Sota ritual. So the Gemara says, Taima de Kamakishlei, that's true. It's in a case where they cancel each other out, where you have an aid who contradicts the first aid, halo kamakishlei aid echad mehetman. But the implication is clearly that if you didn't have someone contradict that first aid, and it was just an aid echad, as we've said many times, that aid echad is sufficient to testify to the tumah that they've been intimate and to call off sota. So what's going? So how do you know that? Minohani milia. How do you know that one aid is sufficient in order to testify that they were intimate together and to now not require sota? The Tana Rabbanan, because we have a pasuk that says, and this is Mitch, this is what you were going to say, or you said before, ve'eid ein ba. It says ve'eid ein ba. Again, this is in the context of the sota, meaning you're only going to apply the sota waters in a situation where there was no testimony about her. Bishnayim hakasav medaber. That says that there were not two witnesses. Ata omer bishnayim oinu el be'achad. Is that true, that that's talking about two witnesses? That whenever it says the word aid, it's a set of aidim? Talmud lomer lo yakum aid echad ba'ish. It says that one person is generally not sufficient to testify against a person, right? You need two witnesses generally in order to convict a person of a crime. Lo yakum eid echad b'ish. Mimashma shenemar lo yakum eid, eni yodeshu echad. The pasuk could have just said, lo yakum eid b'ish. Lo yakum eid b'ish. And that would have taught me that one witness is insufficient. Lo yakum eid b'ish. One witness is insufficient. Ma talmud lomar echad. Why is the pasuk throwing in an extra word there? Lo yakum eid echad bish, that one man is not sufficient. One man witness is not sufficient as testimony. So bze b'nei av, it's a binyan av to teach you kol makom shnemar eid harein kan shnayim. That teaches you that whenever it says eid, it means two, meaning, had the pasuk just said lo yakum eid be'ish, it could have gotten the point across that one witness is insufficient to convict. Why did it go out of its way to say lo yakum eid echad be'ish, drilling down on the fact that this eid is one? It's to teach you that it's only here where I specify eid echad be'ish that I'm talking about one. But eid in Kol HaTorah Kula is a code word, is a term of art for two eidim, for a unit of eidim. And so I can now take that to the cleaners. I could actually use that in interpreting any pasuk in the Torah, whenever it says aid, I could say that aid means a set of two aidim, ad sheyifrot l'cha kasuv echad, unless the pasuk goes out of its way to tell you this aid is one. And so the pasuk v'yakum eid echad be'ish specifically says eid echad because it's teaching you, here we're talking about one witness. One witness is insufficient to convict. But if it had just said v'yakum eid be'ish, that would be a code word for two witnesses. That's not what we're trying to say, right? V'amar rachmana trey. So now that we have that rule down pat, the rule is that whenever it says aid in Kol HaTarakua, it's referring to a set of two witnesses. Go back to our pasuk of Sota. V'yomar Rachmana trey lespa, right? The pasuk says ve'aid ein ba, that a set of two witnesses were not there to say that she had been nitmes, that she had been intimate with the man. Ela chad. But the implication is that maybe there was one person there, saying that if there was one person there, that would satisfy the requirement here of saying that she's definitely tame, and that's the instance in which we would not administer the mesota, v'lo nitpasa asura. And if you could then conclude that she was not, and then so she wasn't taken against her will, she would be asura in that situation, right? So if again, if you look in the pasuk here is v'shachav isho sa shichvazer, she's with a man intimately. V'ne'ela me'ne isha, we don't know what happened here. V'nistera, and she's secluded. V'nitma'a, she's, right, this is describing the situation where she is definitely tameh, where we wouldn't apply the me'sota. So it says, v'hi nitma'a ve'eid ein ba, and we don't have two witnesses, but the implication is we do have one witness, right? V'eid means two. So ve'eid ein ba means we don't have two witnesses. The implication is we do have one witness, v'yigo nitpasa, and as long as we could then conclude that she wasn't taken against her will, she's asura. This is the long-winded way of saying that one witness is sufficient to put her in the category of a tameya, of someone who we know definitively that she was intimate. We will not administer the mesota. She's asura to her husband. And again, all on the basis of one witness. That's how we learn it. Fine. If you didn't follow that very convoluted kind of analysis, the bottom line is we have now our pasuk that taught us that one witness is sufficient to make her tameh, to say that she is definitely tameh. She's asura to her husband. She doesn't drink the mesota. And there the Gemara says, okay, so now we've established that rule. Now, if we remember, our Mishnah said, okay, you have that one witness who said she's tameh, and you're not going to make her drink the mesota. But if another witness comes and is makish that first witness, they cancel each other out. The Gemara says, why should that work that way? Once you have established that mina Torah, in this context, one aid is sufficient, why should the second one have any standing to contradict that witness? Va'amar Ula, doesn't Ula say, whenever the Torah puts power in one aid and believes one aid, we will give that aid the power of two witnesses. It's as if two witnesses came. And if that's the case, we have it. It's like a full-blown testimony. And now what? Another guy comes along and says that's not true. You didn't see her tameh. You didn't see them intimate. Why should we pay any regard to that second witness that came? Once one witness comes, that witness is established as if it's a two-witness testimony. And we should disregard anything that comes afterwards. We've already gotten our two witnesses. What's going on? So Ula says, you're right, my rule stands. Ela Amar Ula, Tini Lo Haisa Shosa. Ula is actually going to change the girsa in the Mishnah to say that even if a second witness comes afterwards and tries to override the testimony of that first witness, she doesn't drink. She doesn't drink because the first witness, who is as believed as a real cast of two witnesses, they are believed, and therefore you disregard the second. Yitzchak also said that, fine. U and Rav Yitzchak are on the same page. Rabbi Chiya, however, says, I don't change the girsa. Rabbi Chiya Amar Haisa Shosa. Rabbi Chiya actually sticks with our original girsa and says, no. In fact, if there's a witness contradicted by another witness, we're going to pay regard to that second witness. We're going to have them cancel each other out. And she's back in the category of someone who does drink. Rabbi Chiya Kashi Ula. How does Rabbi Chiya deal with Ula? Ula's rule is that once you have one witness, it's as if you have two witnesses, and it should not be capable of impeachment by a second witness. Lokashi kam bebas achas kam bezachar zeh. Rabbi Chiya says that's only true if the one witness comes and we've accepted that testimony and we treat it like two witnesses. Now pause, and now a second witness comes. So then Ula is correct. The first witness is hammered down, is good, and we've accepted as two witnesses, and we're going to disregard the second witness. But says Rabbi Chiya, if they come together at the same time, we haven't really nailed down that first witness as a first witness. We haven't given it the imprimatur of having two witnesses testified. It's really two witnesses, one's saying this thing, one's saying the other thing, and they cancel each other out. And so Rabbi Chiya says, when they come, b'basachas, they cancel each other out. Fine. Tanan. Now we are going to have a question on Ula, because the next statement in the Mishnah, Tanan, Eid Omer Nitmeis, Vishnaim Omer Lod Nitmeis, Haisa Shosa. The next statement in the Mishnah says, if you have one aid followed by two witnesses. So the implication, so there you do drink, because the two witnesses will cancel out the one witness. But the implication is, ha-chad v'chad, but if it was only one witness followed by another witness, lo-haisa shosa tiyufta de Rabbi Chiya. It sounds like if you have one and one, that she doesn't drink, unlike Rabbi Chiya, who said that you do. So amr ha Rabbi Chiya u'tameich eima seifa. If you're going to actually follow implications and like that, like you just did, so then look at the next line. The next line is going to be even more confusing. Shnayim omer nitmeis, ve'echad omer lo nitmeis, lo-haisa shosa. If you have the Mishnah said, two say nitmeis, one says lo nitmeis, she doesn't drink. But the implication of that is hachad v'chad haisha shosa. The implication of that is that you have one against one, then she does drink, consistent with Rabbi Chiya's rule. So Rabbi Chiya says, you can't go with these implications, don't read them that way. And rather, the whole last part of the Mishnah is talking about a different topic, which is el kula bipsule edus. The second part of the Mishnah, or I should say the last part of the Mishnah, where we have one against two and then two against one, is a whole different topic, and that is invoking the rule of Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Nechemiah, it's talking about Rabbi Nechemiah. The time Rabbi Nechemiah Omer, Rabbi Nechemiah had a rule that said, Kol makom shemina Torah id echad, hoch achar rov deos. Rabbi Nechemiah had a rule that said that unlike two witnesses, the normal testimony of two witnesses, where once it's locked in, and it can't be undone by later appearance of contradicting witnesses. That's not true when it comes to the Torah's acceptance of one witness. When the Torah accepts one witness, such as here in the context of Tumah, so we'll then actually follow majority rule, so to speak. And if multiple witnesses come and contradict that one witness, so then you count up your tallies and it'll actually work. Vasu shtei nashim b'ish echad, kishnei anashim b'ish echad. And so according to Rabbi Nechemiah, that's how you read the last part, right? If you have an Isha, one says she's Tamei, and then, I'm sorry, the last one was Echad Omer Nitmeis V'Shnei Omer Nitmeis Haisa Shosa. Because there you have two people contradicting the one. You'll say two people is more than one, and therefore she drinks because the two win out. Whereas if you have two people say she's Tamei, one says she's not Tamei, so there she doesn't drink because the two are the majority, and they say she was Tamei, and therefore you don't drink the Meisota. That's the way Rabbi Nechemiah works.
Just to pause for a second.
Yeah.
Really, but this whole discussion is really challenging the notion of, do we really treat Eid Echad as a unit of two? Because that's where we started
yes,
off.
Yes, that's right.
You were saying that one witness has the power in this particular situation of two. And then this one more here is saying, is that really true? Because don't we see where two can cancel out one, and so on. So that seems to be where we're trying to validate or invalidate whether one really does equal.
Right, whether Ua's rule stands or not. That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Yeah, Rabbi Chiya is still going to withstand this because Rabbi Chiya was a whole different thing. He was where they came to Bas Achas, so his thing is different. When they come to Bas Achas, it's a different thing. Right. Okay, the Gemara now, from here till the end, is really just a small wrinkle and saying that some people had a different tradition of what Rabbi Nehemiah held and said that Rabbi Nehemiah only held this rule if the one witness is a puzzle witness, but that if the one witness was a man who would otherwise, in all or other circumstances, if he was paired together with another man, would be a kosher witness, so then Rabbi Nehemiah's rule doesn't apply, and I guess we'll stand, right? So Rabbi Nehemiah's rule that whenever the Torah diminishes the standards, then we're going to actually count up votes. That's only true where... So in the first version of this is that's always true. Whenever the Torah diminishes the standards and allows an Eid Echad to testify, that Eid Echad is susceptible to contradiction by two Eidim who come after him. The second version of the Ika D'Amri is that Rabbi Nehemiah's rule is only true in a case where we're relying on the testimony of a person who would otherwise be puzzled, like a woman. Okay? So that's this Ika D'Amri. Ika D'Amri, kol icha da'asa Eid Echad, kasher meikara, afilu mea nashim nami ke'id echad damyan. That in fact, actually, if the Eid Echad that you're relying on is an Eid Echad kasher, so then you follow the normal rules that even if 100 witnesses come, even 1,000 witnesses come, they're not going to be able to contradict that Eidus once it was established. But Rabbi Nehemiah's rule is only kigon da'asai isha meikara, when the first witness was a psula herself. V'tirtzu de Rabbi Nehemiah hachi, and you'll read Rabbi Nehemiah's rule as being the following. Rabbi Nehemiah omer, kol makom she'emina Torah eid echad, hoch achar rov deos, v'asu shtei nashim b'isha achas, kishnei anashim b'ish echad. Where, as we just said, where it's a woman who's testifying, where it's a puzzle as your one, so then you're going to establish two against one, you're going to go with the two. Aval shtei nashim b'ish echad, ki palga upal gadami. But when it's an Eid Echad who's testifying, and it's only two witnesses, and when it's an Eid Echad that's testifying, we're not going to have the two women trump the one man. Right? Because Nehemiah's rule is that it's only one woman who's susceptible of being trumped by multiple witnesses who come against her. But if it's one man who came, who was otherwise a kosher aid, that's not trumped by multiple witnesses, and that's just kipalgo palgadami. It's as if it's like a chad v'chad. Good. The Gemara then says, v'tarti b'psul eidos slamali. If that's the case, why in our Mishnah did it talk about psule eidos? Why did it talk about psule eidos dafka? And the Gemara answers, Ma'u detema ki azlinan basa rov deos l'chumra aval kulo lo azlinan. You might have thought that this rule of Rabbi Nehemiah is only going l'chumra, but not l'kula. L'chumra means that we would force her to drink, but in a case of l'kula, to not allow her to drink, right, to accept the testimony that it was tameh, maybe Rabbi Nehemiah's rule wouldn't apply. Kamash Mon, so it specifically uses this instance, or this case where it's teaching you even l'kula, that Rabbi Nehemiah's rule applies. I join off with Shekinah.
So at the end,